May the words of my mouth and the thoughts of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our Rock and our Redeemer. Amen. Psalm 119, a part of which we heard today, is a very long hymn of praise for the good law by which the people of God are led and through which they receive a God-given perspective on life. In contrast, our reading from the Gospel of Luke seems to indicate that Jesus questioned the law, certainly a very strict observance of it. St. Paul goes even further. In the letter to the Galatians, he writes, "For all who rely on the works of the law are under a curse, as it is written, 'Cursed is everyone who does not continue to do everything written in the book of the law.' Clearly, no one who relies on the law is justified before God, because the righteous will live by faith. The law is not based on faith. On the contrary, it says, 'The person who does these things will live by them.' Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us. For it is written, 'Cursed is everyone who is hung on a pole.' He redeemed us in order that the blessing given to Abraham might come to the Gentiles through Christ Jesus, so that by faith we might receive the promise of the Spirit." So much for Paul. It somehow seems that there is an opposition between the high praise of the law in the Old Testament and then to an ambivalence and then maybe even a rejection outright. And yet Jesus also told his disciples, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen, will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished." Well, greater minds than mine have thought hard about this and come to various conclusions. And I thought that this morning I will give you a brief reflection, which may be not that deep. I just did not really have the time to go into this topic, for this particular sermon, and research it well. Throughout the Old Testament, it is made clear that the law is good, that it is something that draws people to God, that it is part of the covenant relationship between God and Israel. Through the law, the people orientate themselves towards God. They act with justice and compassion towards each other. They respect the holy, they recognize their own frailty, and they care for the land. Through the law, the people of God are kept from idolatry and practices that lead to destruction. Through the law, the people of God is freed from practices that imprison and freed towards fuller living. That's why the law is praised so much in the Psalms. For example, later on in the Psalm 119 says, it says, "Your statutes are my heritage forever. They are the joy of my heart." That's quite some high praise. I don't think Jesus or Paul would dispute that good aspect of the law. The law was indeed good. At this point, I think I'll have to come to a somewhat sensitive point, namely the difference between Judaism and Christianity. Because in part, how the law is observed and functions is an argument within Judaism. From an outsider's point of view, we might regard Jesus as another Jew who entered that argument of how the law should be regarded. You see, by Jesus' time, there was not only the law contained in the Bible, but a whole body of rules that was built around the law. For example, in Exodus 23:19, there's the rule that which says, "Do not cook a young goat in its mother's milk." Exactly why that is, we don't know. There's some debated indication that cooking a goat in its mother's milk was a part of a Canaanite ritual. On the other hand, This restriction might be some of the humane laws contained in the Old Testament, which indicate that animals need to be treated with respect. Doing something like that, cooking a goat in its mother's milk, would disrespect animals and seem a form of cruelty. Whatever the origins of the law, soon more rules were applied to it, so that it could not be broken inadvertently, for example. So, therefore, no goat would be cooked in a goat's milk. A fence was built around the law. This was then widened, and soon no animal could be cooked in milk at all. Just to make sure that the law was definitely never breached, dairy and meat were not allowed to mix at all, so that to this day, meat pizzas, lasagna, and shepherd pie are forbidden by Jews. Another example is related to tithing. Any produce of the land had to be tithed. 10% had to be taken from it and given to the temple or the synagogue. There were elaborate rules when this tithing had to be done and how you exactly would calculate the 10%. If the produce, for example, was grain, and the grain was then unsold, no further tithing had to be done. So once you went to the merchant, you knew it had already been tithed. So if you bought from a fellow Jew, you could be fairly sure that the produce that you were buying had a portion removed as a tithe. If you bought grain from a Gentile, you could be fairly sure that it had not been tithed, and therefore you needed to tithe soon after purchasing the grain. However, if you bought grain from an uncertain source, for example, from a grain merchant who bought produce from both Jew and Gentile, you just didn't know whether it had been tithed or not. So that was a problem. Therefore, a new rule was introduced that if you had produce of uncertain origin, you had to tithe 10% of 10%, that's 1%. That was just in case so that you did not breach the law. I could give you countless more examples. The books on that are very thick. But the complexities of the law and the safeguards that were put around various provisions would take a very long time to explain. And they normally require an intimate knowledge not only of the law itself, but the way in which it was viewed in later Judaism. One has to note that in Jesus' day, there was considerable debate among Jews on how to interpret the law and all the additional rules that had evolved over time to make sure that one did not come close to breaking the law. I also have to point out that at times the Jews of the time were very practical and did not follow the letter of the law. For example, stoning to death was not a common practice, as was required under the law. Rather, in changed circumstances, prison and banishment were options of punishment that replaced some of the harsher provisions of the law. So, rabbinic Judaism, from which current Judaism is derived, developed a very detailed and vast body of rules and laws. In contrast, it seems Christianity understood the law more according to the spirit than the letter. And Christians soon also read the law more allegorically than literally, so that the law pointed towards Jesus. I think it may be a crude simplification, but I would state it anyway. From a religious study perspective, it can be said that two strands of Judaism survived the destruction of the temple and the erasure of any Jewish state in the 2nd century AD. There was Christianity, which focused more on the spirit of the law, and rabbinic Judaism, which focused more on the letter of the law. I don't think we should hide the fact that there is sharp disagreement over the interpretation of the law between those two strands, and that is already clearly evident in Jesus' words. Of course, in Judaism, there has also been a movement to come to the spirit of the law. But without doubt, there is a lot of preoccupation and study going into the letter of the law with ever more elaborate schemes and rules. And of course, in Christianity, new rules have replaced the old ones. And at times, the lack of attention to the biblical law has allowed the development of practices that would seem to go against the law itself. So as I mentioned, the law gives us a rule to live by and certain freedoms. Now let's take the example from the gospel, the Sabbath. The Sabbath gives us freedom to rest, to cease from constant labor and preoccupation. It gives us peace. About a year ago, a poem about the Sabbath was printed in the diocesan magazine, so I'll read that. Rest, my beloved, rest. Cease your worry and stress. I am your sovereign God. Trust in me and rest. Cease your striving and come to my place of rest. Shelter in my arms. Have confidence in my omnipotence. Relax and listen. Follow my voice. Hear the sounds of my creation and my still, small spirit of silence. Stop, don't you believe I love you? In my presence is fullness of joy. Come to me and just be. Enter my tent of peace and cease. That is the good side of the Sabbath. But as we read in the Gospel, there were countless rules on what could or could not be done on the Sabbath. There were only so many steps you were allowed to take on a Sabbath. There was only this or that kind of activity that you could do on a Sabbath. To this very day, there are Sabbath settings on the hot water cylinder in Jewish households, so that there's not too much electricity is being used. Apparently, some teachers also said that nobody could heal on the Sabbath. Jesus went against that. For him, that goes against the spirit of what the Sabbath was about. For the Sabbath was about health and well-being, about being set free through God. Of course, if we abuse Jesus' word, then again we disregard the law. For if healing is allowed, we might argue, then we can also open GPs, clinics, and hospitals. And if hospitals are open, why not the pharmacy? And if the pharmacy, then why not the supermarket? And if the supermarket, why not the liquor store? And if the liquor store is open, why not do all other work? And if all businesses are open, is it not prudent to restrict our own work on a day off? So that was exactly the fear of the Jewish rabbis. And so they built safeguards that not even any provision, even the slightest one of the Sabbath, could be breached. You can see the dilemma. I think that Jesus brought the right balance to the law by focusing on its spirit. He did not do away with it, but interpreted it for its deeper meaning and for freedom. As a child, I myself always enjoyed the Sunday, which was kept in our house as the Sabbath, and it was quite diligently observed by my family. My father is normally a hard worker, and he cannot see a person being idle. So we would always find some work, or he would find some work for us, particularly on Saturdays. But Sundays were different. First, we went to the church in the neighboring village, about 3 kilometers away in Germany, or later we walked to it in New Zealand. When I was a bit older, I always went by bike because I did not want to go in the polluting, destructive motor vehicle of my family. Well, there was also a seat free that allowed them to take others to church. Then we would have Sunday lunch, which was always a very quick meal of rice and basic meat or rice and fish cakes. If the weather was fine, the afternoon was occupied with a Sunday walk. We would explore streams, sandbanks, rocks, or other scenic points in the wider vicinity. For that, even I hopped into the car. When I was younger, I remember that we normally went in our Sunday clothes on these walks. It seems my parents had become wiser over time, and we were normally given old clothes to wear on Sunday afternoons. We were allowed to make them dirty, as we had not been before. So we slid down dirt banks in the forest or ran through the brush. In later years, I could sometimes persuade my family to do something railway-related. In wet weather, we read books or played board games together. And then came the highlight of Sundays, Sunday evening tea. We always ate cake that my mother had baked on the Saturday. We were allowed to eat as much as we wanted. As a boy, I actually did not eat much food during the week at all. But on Sunday evening, I ate at least a half a cake alone. Sometimes the equivalent of half a Black Forest gâteau. So that is my favorite memory of Sundays. After that, we would often have a slideshow in the lounge, watching sometimes recent slides, sometimes slides from years back. At one point, my grandfather gave us a part of his slide collection for some time, and we watched photos from the days when my mother was a young girl. Through this, the events of the years became firmly embedded in our memory, though a bit skewed to what was recorded on photos. After such Sundays, having to go to school the next day was always a bit of a downer. I looked forward to Sundays. The restrictions that my parents imposed on Sundays made them a time for the family. I think overall they found the spirit of the law rather than the letter of the law. So, well, I hope that this not very learned discussion of the good law made some sense. Of course, any discussion of the law has to be seen in the wider context of God's constant interaction with the world. As followers of Christ, we believe that it is not the law, but rather God's redemptive action on the cross through Jesus that makes us whole and draws us to God. Still, the law gives us freedom if we do not allow it to imprison us.